Okay, I'm here to talk about our work on GPU 10 tracking today. So since we're here to talk about GPUs, I'm going to start with the vulnerabilities of GPUs. So today's GPUs have become incredibly flexible, and the application scope of GPUs has extended beyond the traditional high-performance HPC applications. And more applications that affect our daily life, like machine learning, encryption, finance, and computer vision applications are running on GPUs. So here, and these applications make use of sensitive data. So here you see an input photo to a trained neural network. And then I give you this extracted features during the program execution for this face recognition application. And these are the intermediate data during program execution, which we were able to retrieve. And this leaked data, as you can see from here, contains enough information, enough details that you can use to identify the person in the photo, so even without the original input photos. Okay, so in modern computing systems, there's a range of important memory protection techniques. And none of them are fully available on the GPU. They're mostly missing or incomplete on GPUs. So for example, we have virtual memory support. We can have address-based layout randomization. So the logical address of different memory regions are randomized. We can have process isolation. Different process use different logic, physics, address mapping, page protection, and page associated with different attributes. And bounce checking, and modern CPUs allow a memory erasure or a process once you finish execution. So for GPUs, NVIDIA GPUs has what is called a unified memory, which basically is a single and a simple physical logical address mapping that's shared by different processors and different processes in the running in the same system, which basically makes address space layout randomization and process isolation impossible. And there's no apparent form of bounce checking, and GPUs do not automatically reset the memory once the program finishes executing. So without address space layout randomization, an attacker can predict where the GPU data is. Without process isolation, an attacker can pick into another processing memory and steal important information. And without page protection, bounce checking, an attacker can force a GPU program to write to the memory location it's not supposed to write. And without erasure, memory erasure, a user cannot keep the data safe. Okay, so I'm going to walk you over the GPU memory hierarchy. So the data comes from CPU memory. So data is before a kernel starts running on GPU, the data is copied from CPU memory to GPU memory. So I'm going to show you different points of vulnerability. So first, the data is copied into global memory, and these are easily accessible to an attacker. And then the data flows up. So local memory is a logical partition of the DRAM. And that's usually used for spilled registers or thread private data objects. It can be accessible by attacker because the local memory and global memory share the same DRAM, and because of this simple unified memory address mapping I mentioned before, so basically an attacker can access local memory as well when they're doing global memory operations. And we have shared memory and L1 cache. Shared memory is basically a type of software managed cache. So this is accessible directly to an attacker. And L1 cache sometimes could be accessible as well because for some architectures, L1 cache and shared memory use the same hardware. So you can dynamically configure the size of L1 cache and shared memory. For example, you can allocate less memory to L1 cache and more memory to shared memory. Then the attacker can access shared memory after the program finishes and steal the information that was originally in L1 cache. And lastly, we have registers. So GPUs tend to have a very large register file. A streaming multiprocessor could have 32,000 registers. And it's not directly accessible to the programmer, but attackers can use compilers to copy data from register memory to global memory and then steal the information once the GPU function finishes. So because of all these vulnerabilities, so we turn to dynamic TENT analysis. TENS analysis is a common data flow analysis technique for monitoring sensitive data. It basically tracks how and where the sensitive information flows during program execution. And there has been extensive amount of CPU work with various implementations for TENS tracking. For example, we have compile time instrumentation. We have dynamic instrumentation intercepts the instructions on the fly and modify them. Have whole system emulation, virtual machine support. And none of them was implemented on GPUs. So there are several challenges for GPU 10 tracking. So first, we have to track different types of memories that previously do not exist on CPU. And the dynamic instrumentation is infeasible because there's, so first, there's lack of support from OS or the driver. Secondly, it's difficult to intercept the instructional many threads, like thousands of threads or millions of threads that are running simultaneously. Not to mention modify these instructions on the fly. And emulation is prohibitive because you can have a lot of slowdown because of so many threads running simultaneously. So basically, what I'm talking about here is the first design implementation of GPU 10 tracking system. So we use compile time binary instrumentation, and this instrumentation code will track information flow at runtime. And we use GPU-specific optimizations to minimize tracking overhead. And we can improve the tracking performance by 5 to 20 times. So I'm going to talk about next the different components of our tracking system. But before that, a little bit of background. So TENS tracking, basically, the basic idea is to maintain a TENS map. And we have one TENS bit for every memory location. So in our system, we track a 32-byte memory location. We have one bit for a 32-byte memory location. And we monitor the instructions and operands and how the values propagate. So in this example, the figure on the left is the original code. And the figure on the right is the tracking code we added. So the first instruction assign A to B. So the 10th property of A will be transferred to the 10th property of B. So 10th B equals 10th A. And the second instruction, D equals to B plus C. So basically, if either B or C is 10th, then the variable D is 10th as well. So 10th D equals to 10th B or 10th C here. And our TENS tracking system has four components. So the first component is a binary analysis component. So in this component, we take a GPU program in its binary form, and we are going to disassemble the binary. We're going to reconstruct the intermediate representation of this program. We extract basic blocks, control flow graph, that will be used for analysis later. Then we have a two-pass analysis, which basically analyzes at compile time which operands need to be tracked and which operands do not need to be tracked. And then we have a tracking filter, which will basically filter out the instructions that do not need to be tracked. And then binary instrumentation will modify the assembly and assemble it and convert it back to binary. So for GPU programs, we actually observe that not everything needs to be tracked. So some GPU data is untenable, or they can never reach a TENS sink, a memory location, an on-chip memory, or off-chip memory location. So for example, thread ID and grid size, these are execution parameters that we use to extract the task, assigned to every thread. So therefore, they do not need to be tracked. And anything that propagates from these two variables do not need to be tracked. And constant memory, including the parameters that are passed to the function, and loop iterators, immediate values, and all these examples are untenable. And these operands, we identify this operand through a two-pass analysis framework, a forward pass and a backward pass. So the two-pass framework, the backward pass will basically identify all the variables that can potentially reach a TENS sink. And the forward pass will identify the operands that might potentially come from a TENS source, not coming from something that's untenable. And we combine these two together. So I'm going to show you an example of the backward pass. So in this backward pass, so we go from the last basic block of the program, And we look at which one, which variables, which and the 10 sync, the memory, DRAM, or registers that's not erased later. So now we have block four, basic block four, and then since we go backwards, so we look at the last instruction here. From basic block five, it says these two registers, R0 and R3, could potentially reach a 10 sync. And then we go backwards. So since R0 could reach memory, and then when we look, analyze this instruction, we say that, okay, R1, we need to add R1 into the reachable set, because R0 is constructed using R1 and R3. And since R0 is overwritten at this point, we basically take R0 out of the reachable set for this point of the program. And then the next instruction, I see that R2 will be written to a memory location that's indexed by the value in R1. So R2 could potentially reach memory, so we have to add R2 to the reachable set no matter what. And we'll keep doing this, and we will be able to identify the reachable set at every instruction point of the program. And you see the red text here are basically the operands we need to track for every instruction. So not all of them have to be tracked. So the next example I give you is forward pass. So in this forward pass, we go from the first basic block to the last basic block of the program in a topological order. So in this example, we say that the incoming variables to this basic block four, only R1 is coming from a tentable source, and no other variables come from a tentable source. And therefore, when you look at the first instruction, R0 is constructed from R1, so we say R0 should be added to this tentable set. And next, we keep going over different instructions, and we have, again, the tentable set for every instruction in this program. Okay. So now, after we figure out which operands need to be tracked, we're going to do some instrumentation. And at this step, we do tracking filtering. So this is a naive tracking code. We would basically add one tracking operation for every instruction. So here, I added six operations for tracking, for corresponding to six instructions in this basic block. And now, let's say I identify which operands need to be tracked. And so when I look at the first instruction here, none of the operands needs to be tracked. Then I'm going to eliminate this tracking instruction at the compile time. And then when I look at the second instruction, since it only needs to track R1, although there is some operand that needs to be tracked here, but it's only going to give me TR1 equals to TR1. So it doesn't change the tented state. The R1 variable. Therefore, I eliminate this instruction as well. And another thing that's worth noticing that is I don't have to track every operand in every instruction. So that would also save some binary instrumentation overhead. And for these two instructions, I only have to track partially the operands in this code. Okay, so eventually, see, I reduced the tracking instruction at compile time already significantly. Only two tracking operands are left, and not all operands in these two tracking operations are kept. Okay, so after the tracking filtering, I'm going to rewrite the changes to binary. And before that, there's another optimization we do here. So the tent map is traditionally kept in DRAM, but off-chip memory is very slow on the GPU. It's actually not just on GPU, off-chip memory is very slow in different types of modern computer systems. So since CPU has a very large register file, as I mentioned earlier, a CPU, a streaming multiprocessor, can have tens of thousands of registers. So we keep part of the tent map in on-chip memory. So we keep the register tentedness in the register file. So for example, a register is having 32 bits. So for every 32 tracked registers, we only need one register for the tracking overhead. So that is a minimal amount of tracking overhead. Okay, so now let me show you some evaluation results. So before that, this is our methodology. So we first convert the binary code into assembly using COBJ dump. Then we use our compiler to analyze assembly and add 10th tracking or memory erasure code if necessary. And then the new assembly, we're going to write it back to a binary using the encoding we got from these two open source projects. And we evaluate the tracking effectiveness on NVIDIA GTX 745 and with the computing capability 5.0. So we use 7 different benchmarks from different domains, including machine learning, finance analysis, numerical analysis, cryptography, and bioinformatics. So here I'm going to show you the normalized running time. So all the numbers here are normalized to the original running time, so the smaller the better. So first let's look at the running time of the naive tracking code, that is tracking every instruction, tracking every operand. You can see that you get about 10x performance, like more 10x running time to like 50 times running time compared to the original program, which is not acceptable. Too much tracking overhead. The geometric mean here is 24x around. So now, let's say we're going to put the 10th map in register, the 10th map for registers in registers. And you can see that it reduces the tracking overhead significantly. The geometrical mean for all this tracking time, like overall time is 5.19x, which is a significant reduction. And next I show that if we only do the forward filtering, so we filter out the tracking instructions by a forward analysis by removing the operands that do not come from a tentable source. And you can see that we can still reduce the tracking overhead significantly, although not as much as when you put register, tent map into register. But overall, still it gives us like the tracking overhead, like the geometric average is 8.96x. So next I'm going to show that if we only use backward filtering. So if we only use backward filtering, you can see that for some applications, we can reduce the tracking overhead significantly, but for some others, we don't reduce the tracking overhead. So it's not as effective as putting the 10th map into registers or putting the or the forward filtering, which is intuitive because most of the operations will reach memory eventually. So backward filtering does not give us much benefit, but still it gives benefit for some of them. Okay, so finally, this is the performance when we do a two-pass filtering. So we combine forward filtering and backward filtering, and you can see that even if backward filtering is not so effective, combining them give us better performance. We get 7.38x. And finally, we combine all optimizations, and we get the running time from 1.8x to 5x, so which is a significant reduction, and the geometric mean is 2.8x here. And next, I show you the code size with tracking. And they're correlating with the performance results. So the forward filtering and backward filtering filter out the instructions at the compile time, so the code size is reduced. Putting register tent map in registers does not reduce much code at compile time, because it only changes the type of the tent map. As you can see here, reducing code size is not as effective as putting the tent map into registers, into fast on-chip memory. So we can use the tent tracking to do memory erasure. So we can erase the sensitive data after tracking, when the program ends. So the on-chip memory can only be reliably erased through binary instrumentation. So we'll use the GPU threads to clear their own registers and share the memory, as well as the local thread private data in local memory, which are not directly accessible to the programmers. And then the final tent map that identifies the global memory with sensitive data will be erased as well. But here I'm going to show you the slowdown if we just erase the, we do like thread private data erase, on-chip memory and thread private data erase. And these are the slowdown numbers we got for the code combined with the erasure and versus the code that does not have the erasure. And you can see that there's some level of slowdown, but not significant slowdown. And for SSL shader, so the overhead of erasing the everything, all the everything registered local memory is actually 9 times larger than erasing just the sensitive data we have tracked. Okay, so let me conclude. So here I present the first design, the implementation of GPU dynamic time tracking system. And we use the two-pass filtering tracking that eliminates tracking code compile time already significantly. And we use the GPU-specific optimizations to minimize overhead. And we can get like 5x to 20x performance improvement for tracking. And we can clear the memory that the programmer cannot. So now I'd be happy to take any questions.
I had a general question. So in terms of, you said it's the first time tracking system for GPU. Mm-hmm. How does the complexity of design compare to other Tank tracking systems like Tank Droid or whatnot?
So Tank Droid is for Android. So they basically do the instrumentation at the interpreter level. So it is targeting mobile systems. And they do like variable level tracking. So it's a little bit different from the type of workload that will run on GPUs. So on GPUs, we don't have interpreter environment. So directly instrument the binary code. Then run the let every thread run the tracking by themselves at runtime. So it's a bit different technique, but we all like instrument the code.
How do you define taint sinks and taint sources in the GPU?
Well, right now we. For taint sinks, so in our current tracking system, for anything that could potentially go to memory, DRAM, or anything that does not get reset after the program executes, we treat them as a taint sink. And taint sources, for our experimentation purpose, we track everything as input to the kernel function. But I think you can define it a different way, like which part of the input is taint source, and then the system will automatically track that. I don't know if that answers the question.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up, though. If your inputs are all coming from host memory and you're treating anything that goes back to host memory as a taint sink, what security have you gained?
Sorry, I didn't hear you clearly.
Sorry, it sounds like your taint sources and taint sinks are both host memory. So how do you differentiate?
Both host memory.
Yeah.
It's actually the device memory, so it's a DRAM on GPUs, not the host memory. But we can so host memory is copied to GPU memory through the APIs, the memory copy APIs that could also be tracked easily, I think.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, I'm not quite sure what the threat model is here. Are you looking at protecting from an attacker running in a different process that's sharing the GPU, or are you looking at, you know, some like your main process has been compromised, but I don't know, due to ASLR or something, it's hard for an attacker to get information out of DRAM.
We basically here tracks like where the information is, like which level of memory it has. Mm-hmm. So it could help different scenarios. So it could have two processes running at the same time, and one process make the other process stop, and then mm-hmm. steal the information. So we can track the information, we can erase it, and all like encrypt it if it's still being used. So that's one scenario that we can use to protect.
Okay, so you would erase when you switch.
Yeah,
which process has access to the GPU?
Or encrypt. We haven't. Well, only have done erasure now. So this one is only time tracking, but the data we tracked could potentially be encrypted when they switch in the future.
Okay.
So this would work in that scenario as well.
Thanks.